Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. It's had several names over the past four decades, the Tulsa Little Symphony, the Oklahoma Symphonia, but the Signature Symphony at TCC begins its 40th anniversary season tonight with an opening concert featuring singer-songwriter Ann Hampton Callaway, one of the orchestra's most popular performers over the years. For the season opening performances tonight and tomorrow, Callaway will perform music from the Barbra Streisand songbook, which Callaway, as a songwriter, is a part. This marks the season of performance favorites as voted on by audience and orchestra members for this anniversary season. My guest today is the music director of the Signature Symphony, now beginning his fourth year, Andres Franco. Franco, who also holds positions with the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra and a Music of the Americas group, Caminos del Incas, joins us today to talk about the season opening performances. And after this weekend's performances, tonight and tomorrow, Franco will be making his Dallas Symphony debut next week. In the spirit of full disclosure, I should mention I am a member of the Signature Symphony, which will be performing tonight and tomorrow with Ann Hampton Callaway at 7:30 at the Van Treese Pace. Andres Franco, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, Rich. How are you?
Well, and a pleasure to have you with us. Signature Symphony, celebrating its 40th anniversary. It's an orchestra with many names over the years, from the Tulsa Little Symphony to Oklahoma Symphonia to now Signature Symphony. When you began thinking about programming the 40th anniversary season, take me through your thought process.
I'll tell you my thought process in general. I always have the audience and the orchestra in mind when I program a season. I want people to like what we program. I also want the orchestra to grow and to try new things. So that goes for any season that I program. And when we were going to program this season, because it is an anniversary season, I said, you know what, maybe I should ask the orchestra, the audience, everyone in the Signature Symphony family what they would like to hear and what the favorite artists and music and genres have been for the past 40 years. So last fall, we had surveys for our first couple of concerts on both the pops and the classics, asking people, let us know what you would like to hear. Let us know what your favorite artists have been. We did the same with the musicians, with the Signature Symphony Advisory Board members, staff. Everyone but me got to vote on what the favorites had been. And the idea was to really just celebrate with those who have helped us become a symphony that's celebrating 40 years of, you know, these 40 years. I turned 40 just a couple of years ago, and that's quite a feat on its own. But for an arts organization to survive and thrive for 40 years is very important. So I decided to have everyone, all the stakeholders, have a voice, and we collected those surveys, we tallied them, and then we chose the top five on each one, pops and classics. Obviously, some of the artists who were favorites are no longer with us, or are no longer singing or playing, or are just not around. But interestingly enough, I think we actually got all the five on both sides. We were able to feature them.
So there were consensus choices, pretty much, from your audience?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We just basically took all the surveys and tallied them. So that was it. And
what are they paying you for? That's
I know, exactly. Well, they are paying me to put together the season, because you cannot just say, okay, these are the five artists and then program them. It's not that easy. You have to start planning things around. And we'll see when we talk about the season how you start combining things. I also wanted to have that element of bringing in something new into the season. So we are bringing one new artist in the pops, Walter White, who's going to be leading the Signature Big Band. The Big Band as a group was one of the favorites. So you see, I have to find ways to bring the favorite, but also have something new. So it's not just the same music we have been playing for the last 40 years. So there's a little bit of a twist. And the same thing for the classics. We were bringing one concert. We're bringing this young Venezuelan violinist who is going to be performing Tchaikovsky's violin concerto, you know, which is an audience favorite for sure. And I paired it with Amy Beach's symphony in E minor. So I still get to play and be creative, but it's great just to see how consistent the voting was for the top artist. And I have to tell the audience and everyone in the family, you have a very good taste.
Were there any surprises in what was popular to you?
No. There were really not surprises. I was very happy to see that Mahler symphonies got votes. You know, Mahler is not the composer you think like top 10 classical music, like in terms of audience favorite, but Mahler symphonies got votes. Christmas in Tulsa got votes as a concept, as well as the Fortnum the Third. I think those were the top two, actually. Christmas in Tulsa and Fortnum the Third.
Of course, you're going to do that.
And
anyway,
we will most definitely keep doing Christmas in Tulsa and Fortnum the Third. But again, the idea was to find ways to those favorites with a little bit of a twist. Sometimes I combine two favorites. In that case, Christmas in Tulsa is going to be with Cherish the Ladies, which was another one of the top audience favorites.
Now, obviously, you have to look at what's also happening in the world. And, of course, in the classical world, the big story this early part of the year has been Leonard Bernstein's 100th anniversary. And I guess you're doing music for that as well.
We are actually celebrating Bernstein's centennial in multiple ways. The first one is going to be our first classics of the season on September 22nd. It's going to feature the symphonic dances from West Side Story. But my wife, Victoria, who plays the clarinet, was one of the audience favorites. I'm not going to say that I was surprised by it, but I was very pleased that I didn't have to say anything. So my joke is, you know, I wasn't going to program anything with her, but, you know, if you tell me to, so who am I to say no to you? So she will be playing Bernstein's Prelude, Fugue, and Riffs for clarinet. This is an orchestral version that Lucas Foss wrote. The original was for clarinet and jazz band, and this one actually has strings as well. But it's a great piece. And then the second half, playing off that theme of symphonic dances, we will be doing some symphonic dances from Latin America. So Marcus's Danzón, which was, by the way, the first piece I ever conducted with the Signature Symphony, that was one of the audience favorites as well. And we were going to be doing music by Ginaster as well, for dances from his ballet Estancia, as well as a piece by Piazzolla. So you see, I still get to play a little bit. I was also playing off the fact that Bernstein used a lot of Latin rhythms in West Side Story. We're all very familiar with the mambo and the cha-cha and so forth. But then that was the idea with that concert, that the second half is going to be music from Latin America.
Well, and of course, when you open your season this weekend, you'll also have a little Bernstein as well.
We will also have a little Bernstein as we open the season. The favorite artist for this opening pops is going to be Anne Hampton Calloway, wonderful singer and songwriter and actress. And she worked with Barbara Streisand. We can talk a little bit about that later. But we are most definitely going to be doing some West Side Story selections for the orchestra this weekend. It's going to be opening the second half. And there are so many connections. Like when you start looking at Broadway, there are so many connections in terms of composers and lyricists and librettists. So Jules Stein wrote the music to Gypsy, right? So we're opening the show with the overture to Gypsy. He also wrote the music for Funny Girl, which was the big Streisand hit when she started. But Gypsy, the lyricist, was Stephen Sondheim. And it was based on a book by Arthur Laurent, who also wrote West Side Story, the book
it
was based
on. That's the creative team for West Side
Story. And Sondheim also wrote the lyrics for West Side Story. So you know, everything is interconnected, so it's really fun to find this ties between the programs we do. So yes, we'll hear a lot of Streisand, you know, songs that she made famous. We'll hear a couple of songs that Anne Hampton Calloway actually wrote for Barbara Streisand, and Barbara recorded one of them. She actually sang at her own wedding. She sang it to her husband. And we're going to hear a little bit of Bernstein as well, just to kick off the celebration. The last pops of the season, which will feature Tulsa Sings, is also going to be Bernstein and Robbins' centennial celebration, because both Leonard Bernstein and Jerome Robbins are celebrating their 100th anniversaries this season. So there's going to be that one as well. And we have a program also with the Signature Chorale is going to be singing Chichester Psalms, as well as some other selections by Bernstein. And this is a collaboration with the Jewish Federation of Tulsa. So this is going to be performed at their campus in South Tulsa.
So you mentioned Anne Hampton Calloway singing the music of Barbara Streisand. What is the relationship, other than writing songs, have they worked together, or what exactly?
Yeah, they have worked together. I think Barbara really liked Anne Hampton's music. The first song that she recorded was At the Same Time, which came in number one, and then it got her a platinum. Also, when she was planning her wedding, she asked Anne to write the lyrics for this song. And later on, Barbara also decided to record one of Anne Hampton's Christmas songs for one of her Christmas albums. So yeah, definitely they have had a working relationship.
And she's an amazing vocalist because she can sing jazz, she can sing pop, she can sing Broadway, she can sing just about anything.
Just about anything. It's just amazing.
Have you ever worked with her before?
Yes, I did. I did work with her in Fort Worth. Must have been about 9 years. You know, time really flies. Yeah. If things like, oh, there was a couple of years ago, and I was looking at the programs like, oh, no, this is like 9, 10 years ago. Where did the decade go? Yeah, so, and that time we were doing more of jazz standards, which again, Anne can sing anything. And she improvises too. It's quite amazing what she can do on the piano. I'm pretty sure she will do something like this where she asks people for lyrics and then she improvises something on the piano and she makes up a song on the spot. So if you want to see a song being made, please come to our concerts this weekend, Friday and Saturday.
So you're going to be doing the typical Streisand material?
Yeah, it's going to be the typical Streisand material. You will hear some of the songs have a different take on them. For instance, starting here, starting now, which is sort of a slower ballad. The way that Anne does it is like a very up-tempo jazz waltz. And there are going to be a couple of things that will sound differently from the way Barbara recorded them. But yeah, there's going to be a lot of great material. Of course, Cry Me a River will be another one. At the same time, which we mentioned, was a song that Anne wrote for her. Of course, Don't Rain on My Parade. That has to be on any Streisand review that you do. And we will also hear I've Dreamed of You, which is the song I mentioned that Anne wrote for Barbara's wedding, and that Barbara actually sang at her own wedding, besides recording it and releasing it in a couple of different albums, including as a single.
Now, are you a fan of Streisand's music yourself?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of Barbara Streisand for sure, yeah. And Don't Rain on My Parade is, you know, such a hit. That's definitely something that anyone would recognize as being Barbara Streisand, and of course, it sort of launched her career.
My guest today is Andras Franco, the music director of the Signature Symphony, as the Signature Symphony begins its 40th anniversary season this season. And this year, they basically polled anybody who had connections with Signature Symphony to come up with the selections they're going to play throughout the year. And a couple of concerts, it's interesting, there's some concepts that has been a part of Signature Symphony. Barry Epperle used to do these sort of Meet the Composer series, and you're sort of reviving that, but in a different way later in the season. How are you going to do it?
So this is an idea that I got because the first season we did our first installment of the Mahler project, which was Mahler Symphony No. 1. I did talk during the concert, not before. Like, we played an opening piece, and then after that opening piece, I talked about the symphony. I played a couple of excerpts on the piano, and I explained what Mahler Symphony No. 1 was about. I talked about the composer. We had some visuals as well, so that people can get an idea of, you know, what his little hut looked like, where he used to go in the summers and compose, the lakes he lived by, and, you know, the places where he lived in general. And people really liked the idea. So, and many of them said, you know, I love music, and a lot of times I don't know what the music is about. And when you tell me a little more about the background story, I enjoy it even more than I would if I didn't. And, you know, I think music can be enjoyed by anyone, even if you have no idea and you walk into a concert, you know, a piece of music can grab your attention. You can still get an emotional connection to the music. You can still be uplifted. You can be moved. But definitely when you know more about what the piece is about and about what the composer was going through, and when you know there's a theme that comes back throughout all the symphony, just to give you an example, when you know what to listen for, then it is a much richer experience. So people kept telling me, like, this is great. So I said, we should do that with masterpieces. So the idea is that we will be presenting different, it doesn't have to be a symphony, in this case it is going to be a symphony, by different composers that were historically significant. And we're going to be exploring a little more in-depth the piece, and there's going to be, for the most part, just one piece on the program. So it's not even one composer, it's just one piece. We will do the first installment of this new idea in November, this is November 3rd, with Beethoven's Eroica. And I have to tell you, we will play an overture just because, you know, just one symphony is too much. It depends on the length of the symphony, but we'll play an overture that is connected to Eroica. And then the rest of the first half of the concert is going to be live samples and live demos and conversation and images. And I'll be talking about why Beethoven is so important. I know everyone knows how the Fifth Symphony starts and everyone knows the name, but why was he so important in the history of classical music and why Eroica is such an important piece of music? And the idea is, you know, we have these masterpieces that everyone knows they are a masterpiece. How many people do know why? Many, of course, but, you know, there are so many people who go to concerts and don't necessarily know why these pieces, this music is significant. And the idea is just to start making those connections, you know, historically, artistically, connecting with what was going on politically, even in the case of Beethoven's Eroica at the time, and also musically. So you know what to expect when you listen to the whole symphony, and then you know what the themes are and how they are connected. And then we have an intermission, and then on the second half, we play the piece from beginning to end. So you still get the concert experience, but it's just sort of an enhanced concert experience. Again, I think it's much richer when you know what's going on and why this music is so important.
Now, it sounds like audience members came to this, but I have to imagine TCC would be happy about this sort of this in-depth educational experience.
Yes, of course. I always think about everything we do as a symphony orchestra has an educational component to it. We are keeping these great masters of the past alive. We are making sure that the masters of the present are being performed as well. We are also making sure that we play music that has been composed recently. We have done a lot of world premieres recently. And all of that has to do with education, with bringing the culture, bringing all of these ideas that surround the music itself, bringing it to the audience. So in my mind, everything we do is educational. Sometimes it's a little more intentional, as in this case, where it's going to feel more like an educational experience. But in my mind, every single concert we perform has a very strong and very important educational component.
When you think about how the Signature Symphony fits, I know you conducted another orchestra once upon a time that was associated with an institution of higher learning. Is there a special role that that orchestra has to play?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think when I was interviewing for the job, I told everyone that one of the things I like about this orchestra is that we have the words community and college into our name, because the Signature Symphony at Tulsa Community College, right, at TCC for short. But I think the role of music in the community and the role of music in education is paramount. And I think the future of classical music, the future of orchestral music is tied to that role in society, that role in our specific community. So that was one of the things that excited me about the job, is that you actually have to go into the community. You are embracing the community. You are bringing in the community. But also, because of the word college, you are also tied to education. So we have many initiatives that are connected to education. For instance, the open rehearsals on Thursdays before each one of the classics is the same idea. It's a free event. Anyone can come. There are no tickets. And basically what you get to see is I talk for about half an hour before rehearsal starts, just to share some thoughts about the music you're about to hear. Sometimes we have the guest artist or the guest composer or a guest for those 30 minutes. And then you get to see the first hour of the rehearsal. You actually get to see how an orchestra rehearses. I talk from time to time. I have to be very, very careful with the time because, you know, I do need the rehearsal time. This is a real rehearsal. We are not pretending we are rehearsing. We are rehearsing. In fact, this is not even the dress rehearsal. This is the second or third rehearsal in the series. But that is also educational. Of course, we have the Signature Quartet. They go into schools and they present many wonderful educational programs. And again, this season alone, we will do the Beethoven Eroica. We'll have a very strong educational component. Our Mahler project has had a very strong educational component as well, where I tell people a little bit about my impressions of the symphony and I introduce them to the music of Mahler and his life. We did the same for, we started with Mahler 1. We did the same this last April with Mahler 5. We are doing Mahler 2 in April of 2019, and it's going to be the same. I will always talk a little bit, just because I think it's important for people to know what the music is about and to have a deeper connection to the music. Again, if you want to show up, in the case of Beethoven's Eroica, if you want to show up to the second half and just hear the music, that's fine too. So that's an option.
But you find that audiences like hearing more about the work that they're about to hear, though.
Absolutely. Like, we had the season kickoff reception last week, where we have our patrons. We have this event at TCC every season when I talk a little bit about the season. And I was talking to patrons around, and one of them who is fairly new to the organization said, you know what? One of my favorite concerts last season was the Night at the Opera, when we did sort of a survey of opera, and we ended with the works of Tobias Picker on the second half, after having surveyed from the Renaissance all the way to the 20th century. And I hear a lot of good comments about that kind of work, because it is an educational experience. When you go to a concert and you are being presented with music that obviously you do not hear every day necessarily on TV, of course you hear it as soundtrack, but not as music presented to you. So this is something that I think should be in everyone's lives, but it isn't, except for organizations like the Signature Symphony or public radio when they do classical music programming, jazz, the same. This is something that I believe makes our lives better, and live music has that extra component of being performed live, so there's that excitement. So when you can connect all of that to education and make people realize, oh, this is great music, I just don't know enough about it, or I knew the theme. I mean, most people knew many of the songs we performed, songs, quote-unquote, for the opera concert, because they have been used in movies or in commercials and so forth. But then when you hear the actual piece of music, you're like, oh, this is great music. And if you know more about it, you're going to get hooked on classical music, which is one of my goals.
You know, it's interesting. Leading up to the 100th anniversary, I believe it was several cable channels, and I think it was Sundance and a couple of others, were playing old Bernstein young people's concerts that he did with the New York Philharmonic, first back in the old Carnegie Hall and then later in Lincoln Center. And they just did a whole series of them for a couple of nights, and some of the omnibus programs he was doing. It was interesting. You know, he was talking to these 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old kids at a pretty high level about the music.
Oh, yes, and a very sophisticated language, too. So, yeah, definitely.
And it was interesting that, it's like those kids, they were eating it up, I mean, it was interesting watching from the 50s to the 60s, there was sort of a little cultural change. But still, nonetheless, he was not dumbing down this talk, and it was something that they were getting across through the course of a concert program.
Yeah, no. When I watched some of those episodes, because I do watch them from time to time, it is amazing the sophistication that he was able to achieve in those educational concerts. So yes, it is great. Speaking of omnibus, Prelude, Fugue, and Riffs, which is the piece we were playing on Classics 1, was actually completed because of omnibus. And it's a very interesting story. So he was writing the piece for Woody Herman and his jazz band. And the band disbanded, and the commission money never came in. So he said, okay, I'm going to use it for something else. So he used it for Wonderful Town, and he had a couple of he used the music itself. The scenes got cut. So he used some of the music, but not the whole thing. And finally, there was this episode on Omnibus where he was going to be talking about jazz and syncopation, and that is when he finally wrote the piece, the original one for jazz band and solo clarinet. And he dedicated it to Benny Goodman, but it was not Benny Goodman the one who premiered it. It was Al Galdoro. So, three clarinetists took to get the piece completed. And finally, it was because of television and Omnibus that he sat down and wrote the piece. There's a wonderful YouTube video of Bernstein conducting, of the whole episode. It is really, really, really terrific.
So you're doing Beethoven Symphony No. 3 as this sort of extended educational classics concert this season. What are some of the other works that you think would benefit from that approach that you're thinking for future years?
There are so many of them. I think Shostakovich Symphony No. 5 is another one that would work very well, just again, because you can talk a lot about politics and about music and many different things. The Rite of Spring is another one that if you listen for the first time, it may be a little too much. But if you know what's going on and why it is important, then it's going to be a lot more meaningful. I wouldn't say enjoyable. I think it's a great piece of music and you would enjoy it. But I think almost any piece of music would benefit from something like this. Something I do in Pittsburgh, one of my duties with the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra is doing the pre-concert talks when I am in town. the difference is that these ones happen before the concert, so unless you get there really early, then you won't get to hear it. And the other thing is that I sometimes have a piano and I do some demos, and I definitely have recordings and I do demos from the recordings and I present them, but it's not the same when you have the orchestra playing it for you. So I think any piece of music benefits from knowing more about the background and about musically what's important, but obviously the masterpieces are the ones that I want to focus on, just because, you know, it's just knowing culture, knowing very important pieces of art, of musical art, that are significant in Western civilization, and I would say just civilization in general, and any of them, but, you know, the big ones, of course, Rite of Spring, Beethoven 5, Shostakovich 5, some of the Bach passions would be great. I mean, there's so much music, you name it. We could do this for every single concert, except we still have to play more music, so I don't want it to become like every concert the same, but, you know, just use it as much as possible.
Are you finding that when you're doing these pre-concert talks or when you're doing this in depth, that you're seeing a different audience than perhaps you would have seen maybe 10 years ago, when it might have been an older audience that were wanting to learn about music? But, you know, you have this whole generation of Americans that really didn't have that grounding in music education and music appreciation that they probably did about two generations ago. Are you seeing those people show up?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, they definitely show up. And I think that's why it is so important that we do it. Because as you were mentioning, I say something like you said earlier, everyone knew who Bernstein was like 30 years ago, 40 years ago. Everyone knew who the music director of the New York Philharmonic was. If you ask anyone on the street right now, who's the music director of the New York Philharmonic, they will probably look at you like, the what? So, yes, there has been an erosion of musical education and music appreciation education, and that's where we symphony orchestras come in, because we are filling that void that was created, that, you know, people don't do it on a regular basis anymore, but it's still important. You know, the importance of music has not diminished. The way we educate people about music has diminished. So I think we play a very important role in filling that gap and filling that void, making sure that people still have access to great music and still can understand and be educated about music. It is just going to happen in a different format than it did two generations ago.
Well, the 40th anniversary season kicks off this weekend with the music of Barbara Streisand and Ann Hampton Callaway. And then later in the month, it'll be a celebration of Leonard Bernstein's music and the music of Latin America. Sort of a very interesting first month for the symphony.
Yes, as I said, it's always fun to see how these pieces come together, and there are all connections between, in this particular case, the first two concerts, the first pops and the first classics. There are so many connections that sometimes I see before I program, and sometimes I see like, oh, there's a connection here that I didn't even think about. It probably was somewhere in my mind. It was just not a conscious connection. But yes, a very exciting beginning of the season, and we have to thank our audience for having such a great taste and voting for such great artists we presented during the entire season.
Andres, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you. My pleasure.
Andres Franco is the music director of the Signature Symphony at TCC, now beginning his fourth year as music director. The Signature Symphony begins its 40th anniversary season tonight and tomorrow evening, featuring singer-songwriter Ann Hampton Callaway in two performances at 7:30 at the Van Treese Pace. For more information on the concert, visit signaturesymphony.org. And in the spirit of full disclosure, I should mention I am a member of the Signature Symphony. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.